Checkerfin.
Fordham is always in my head.
Checkerfin. Checkerfin.
Yes.
It's the education gadfly.
Sex,
nationals. Mike and Rick tell you.
Early college, high school. Pain and suffering.
Learning and teaching.
In your face. In your face.
Your
face.
That they be preaching. Cause here's the education gadfly show. Yeah. It's the education gadfly.
Hello, this is your host Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation. Here with my co-host, the oh so delectable Rick Hess.
Why, Mike, that's so sweet, bub.
It is sweet, but I feel like we've used that line before. That's because Liam doesn't update the script from week to week.
Mike, you're really...
And you know what the interesting thing is? You know, annual review time is right around the corner here at Fordham. You'd think Liam would put a little extra effort in.
You know, I got to say, you really ought not be working off scripted prompts for your kind of jovial, like,
that's true,
how
true.
You doing?
What was it? Ron Burgundy? Was that the movie where he...
Anchorman.
The Will Ferrell movie.
Anchorman.
Right? Yeah.
Right? The Legend of Ron Burgundy.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that was...
Speaking of Will Ferrell, my wife and I watched Blades of Glory the other night. A great movie,
Mike,
I thought.
Well, first, it came out, what, 10 months ago? So you guys are actually ahead of the curve for yourselves.
Rick, this is... Yeah, I mean, this is pretty good for us.
It is. And two, you liked Blades of Glory?
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Not so much, huh? I want to talk about something else, Rick. You spent all day yesterday... Where was that at? The National Education Association.
Yes, it is true. I got to say, it was pretty interesting.
Yeah. You know, I spoke to the National Education Association just a few weeks ago. Do you think this is some sort of conspiracy? Are they trying to silence us by having us come in and talk to them?
You know, it is worrisome when, the fact that either we're going native to D.C.
Right.
or it's just a fact that they're much more open-minded than some of the other advocates who we like to think that we're more friendly with, or who the heck knows what's going on.
It's a very strange development. Well,
it is strange.
We have a lot to cover today. As always, we're going to play a game of Pardon the Gadfly. Then we have an interview with an international journalist who will talk about America's PISA fiasco.
And a fiasco that thing is.
It sure is. We're not even talking about the latest test score results that just came out. We're talking about how the next time test score results come out, we will have no test score results in reading.
You know, because the front printing bled through, so they started on the wrong page, so their instructions didn't make any sense. I mean, what the heck is going on here?
It's tragic.
It's just tragic. Nuts, man.
All right. Somebody should be held accountable for this, Rick.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll
mm-hmm.
discuss about who that person should be.
Mm.
All right. And then Liam will impart some education news of the weird. Sound good?
Works for me, babe.
All right. Let's play Pardon the Gadfly. Christina, kick us off.
Topic one. Barack Obama released his education plan last week and plugged his pet idea, urban teacher residency programs, where aspiring teachers spend a year interning in high-quality schools while working on their certification. Is this the answer for our teacher quality woes?
No, not even a little bit.
But there's that really good-looking guy in Chicago who was in Boston before that everybody loves that's really in favor of this.
Tim Knowles.
What's his name? Tim Knowles.
Yes, I like Tim. Tim's a great guy. You know, but the problem here, there's a couple problems. One, I mean, it's ironic that here we are, we all recognize that a lot of the schools we're dealing with, these urban areas, are challenging schools, challenging kids. So the idea is to take people who don't know yet what they're doing, which we, you know, we all recognize that especially in the first couple of years in a classroom, you learn stuff. Take people for 1 year, stick them in a school where they're not actually situated, where they're not actually in a position to be really effective, and only have them there for a year, kind of cut and dried, understood. That doesn't make any sense to me. The notion that we want to retain most of our expectations about urban about preparation and residencies and simply require that these kids are also doing a year in these schools as relatively ineffectual instructors is part of that doesn't make any sense to me. I don't actually see what this does that adds value or what problem it solves.
So wait, your problem is that the way this works is the candidates are spending basically a year interning in these schools, right? And they're getting paid for it. While they're doing, which makes this a very expensive program.
Mm-hmm.
But what, you think that the other teachers aren't necessarily very effective at imparting how to be a good instructor?
I have very little confidence that simply being around other teachers is going to be a significant boost in terms of your teacher quality.
But even if these teachers are good, strong teachers and these are highly effective schools?
How many highly effective schools are we going to be able to identify? I mean, if these are highly effective schools, it strikes me that it's probably not the best allocation of these dollars and these people because we don't need them in the highly effective schools as much. And if these are highly effective, you know, and if we are put in the highly effective schools, they're not there long enough to actually, you know, I'm not sure exactly what the heck the thing's supposed to accomplish.
there you have it. We should ask Tim Knowles sometime. Who, by the way, looks a lot like Tobey Maguire, I think. Mm. Don't you think?
Yes, he does.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, I mean, just real quick, what's the notion? How does Tim think this thing is going
to
work?
Well, I don't know. I don't want to speak for Tim, but, you know, this basic idea is that teachers need to have much more intensive training than they're getting today. And it's pretty similar to the medical model, right, of having residencies or internships for people going into the profession.
But, I mean, is the expectation that we can really expect these folks to stay in education more than 3 or 4 years?
That
the kinds of people who are going to be attracted to these programs.
Yeah.
I just don't understand what they're trying to do with this.
Okay.
Moving on. Top-tier colleges, including Harvard, Princeton, and the University of Virginia, are using new techniques to reach out to potential students from minority communities and help them succeed once on campus. Does this cross the line into reverse discrimination, or is this affirmative action the way it was meant to be?
You know, this to me strikes me as a reasonable approach. There's a program, for example, at Florida State that's having very strong results, Liam's alma mater, at recruiting and retaining minority students. You know, the right way to do affirmative action, it seems, is to do this kind of reaching out, identifying talented young people, and giving them the support that they need to make a transition, especially, you know, kids who are the first ones in their families to go to college are going to need perhaps some extra help than other kids are going to need. And the point is so that once they get on college campus, they don't have to take remedial courses, but they can get extra support along the way. This all seems pretty reasonable.
It does at that level. On the other hand, I'm profoundly uncomfortable with the fact that this stuff is all race-based. I mean, if the notion here was, look, we want to find kids who are coming from behind the eight ball and are, you know, need a hand up, I'm fine with that. But the fact that we're actually targeting these resources on kids because they happen to be black or Latino, and if you're a white kid out of Appalachia or a tough circumstance and that you're not getting any of this support, I'm not quite sure what the logic is behind that position.
All right. So you would make it class-based then instead?
My Rick Collenberg hat.
Yeah. Oh, I see. Rick.
But that's right. No. But certainly, I mean, if what we're doing is we're talking about treating, you know, recognizing that some kids have are starting with fewer advantages than others, and we're saying colleges and universities are trying to overcome that and address that, I think that makes all the sense in the world. But I am profoundly uncomfortable with the notion that these should be targeted strictly on whether, you know, what color skin a kid happens to have.
Okay. Rick Hess in favor of affirmative action.
Mike Petrilli in favor of race-based affirmative action.
There you go. Okay.
Last one. MIT's Nicholas Negroponte is everywhere these days, it seems, promoting his One Laptop Per Child initiative, which aims to get $100 laptops into the hands of millions of children in the developing world. Is there reason to believe that this sort of technology can transform education and life chances for poor children overseas?
I mean, sure, it's possible. You know, I mean, frankly, a lot of these underdeveloped countries that they're targeting these efforts on, they don't have the infrastructure to deliver effective education. They don't have the basic building blocks. They don't have techs. They don't have pens. So in those kinds of circumstances, laptops can give you access to a whole bunch of resources and a whole bunch of opportunities that the kids don't have without them. That said, that all this stuff does is kind of create the opportunity to do some things. And I'm entirely unconvinced that it's likely that they're going to take advantage of the new opportunities.
You know, one interesting part of this story is that Negroponte's group, which is a nonprofit group, a lot of MIT scholars that are trying to create a $100 laptop and sell them around the world, that they are now facing stiff competition from some of the big boys in computing. Their particular system wouldn't use a Windows platform. It wouldn't use Intel chips. And now there are some of the other players in the computer world that would have those systems and are trying to come in at a very low price point as well. And, you know, Negroponte, to his credit, says, hey, this is great. I'm not really concerned about being in the computer business. I'm in the education business. It would be fantastic if we saw that kind of market response in other parts of education.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and the reality here is the reason you're seeing that response is because you got for-profit entities are worried about losing, you know, potentially permanently large chunks of market share. And of course, that only is going to apply where we let the for-profits really play. You know, and right, I mean, this is, you know, it strikes me that it's hard to be against this idea. It's a nice idea. It creates opportunities. But actually, you know, Maine's been giving out laptops to middle school kids for a while. I think the results are mixed at best as to whether this money has been well spent.
Well, except that Maine students have a lot more MySpace friends than other students do.
You know, and frankly, you know, in Maine, you're not expecting these things to stand in or kind of offer as many opportunities as they do in these third world nations. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's certainly, you know, it's certainly hard to imagine how this, you know, how this does any harm. And if it does any good, that'd be great.
Hey, I think we should launch an effort here in the United States to have, you know, free or very cheap textbooks that tries to put pressure on the textbook companies to change their ways.
You know, kind of like what's going on in Florida.
With the open source stuff?
Mm-hmm. With the wireless generation just getting approved.
Yeah.
Now, that's right. That's a case where you're going to, it's going to be interesting to see these for-profit outfits, you know, have to start worrying about protecting market share.
Okay. Well, speaking of textbooks and test books, how's that segue? We have an interview right now to talk about the PISA fracas. Let's take a listen. Joining us today on the Education Gadfly Show is the well-known Kazakh journalist Borat Sagdiyev. Welcome, Borat.
You are my best friend.
Oh, thank you, Borat. I really appreciate that. Well, we've got you on the show today because we have a bit of an international crisis brewing. It seems that a big international exam called the PISA was given to American students recently. And unfortunately, the test booklet that those students were using was misprinted. And that has caused us to invalidate the entire results. The National Center for Education Statistics basically says that we're not going to get reading results from the latest round of the PISA because of this mistake. Now, here at Fordham, we support testing, so we view this as a big setback.
Do you have policies?
Well, of course we do, Borat. We believe in standards-based accountability.
What else is your policy?
Well, we also promote school choice, especially in the form of charter schools.
Yes. Why?
Well, because we believe parents make better choices for their children than bureaucrats.
My mother, she never loved me. She never loved me.
Oh, well, I'm sorry to hear that, Borat. But back to PISA. So Mark Schneider, who is the commissioner of the National Center for Education Statistics, he has blamed the testing company that printed that PISA test. Do you think he's trying to shed the blame?
He have a very big testicles.
Huh. Who directs testing in Kazakhstan?
Do you know a Corky Butchik? He is a strong man. He will crush his opponents, and he will be powerful like Stalin, and not tolerate people who are bad.
Now, that sounds like the kind of person we need to put in charge of the National Center for Education Statistics.
Corky Butchik have a show. You know, he have a very famous the song, Bing Bang. Bing bang, dang 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 dang. Bing bang bang, di da 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 da, di da di da di.
Okay, Borat. Well, thank you for coming on the show, but I'm afraid that's all the time that we've got. Hope you'll come back.
Bing bang bang, di da 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 da, di da di da.
So, what do you think? Borat makes some pretty compelling case that. I don't know. Maybe Mark Schneider, isn't being as strong as he could be on this particular issue.
Once again, we've taken an important issue and trivialized it beyond all recognition. You know, I mean, the funny thing here is actually, I mean, you know, accountability, is always desirable. I mean, I think there's nothing that anybody at NCES or at IES did that was wrong here. What happened was the contractor in having the printer actually print up the booklets. The front page bled through, and so they couldn't read the second page inside the front flap. So they said, why don't we just go ahead and, the printer just went ahead and started the text on the next page. And that, of course, threw off all the directions. I mean, clearly, somebody in the food chain should have looked at this for 2 seconds and said, you guys just totally screwed up the directions to the kids. But frankly, this was all contracted out from NCES. So I think somebody clearly goofed up. The contractor here is paying a fine, but there's nothing that anybody at NCES, I don't think, did that, or that they could have been expected.
Well, that's fair. And we like to have a little bit of fun with our friend Mark Schneider. You know, Liam asked the good question the other day about, we wonder how often this sort of thing happens at the state level. And do they take the effort to retest the kids, or do they just kind of look the other way?
Mm. What's the answer? Yeah. Liam, I thought you would have researched it by now. No? Fordham, you guys are a research entity. Y'all could have nailed this down.
But, Liam, he used to be a research assistant, but he's not a research assistant anymore.
What does he know?
He's an associate writer and editor.
What's that mean?
It means that he doesn't do research.
I mean, it's a lot of title inflation going on around the Fordham Foundation. That's
but you know what Liam does do? He brings us that special time.
Bring it.
The time we all wait for every week, all week long. It is Education News of the Weird Time. with our special correspondent, Liam Julian. Liam, what's weird this week?
Puyallup High School principal Mike Joyner has been reprimanded for his hugs and kisses. Apparently, the reprimand by Washington State's Puyallup School District comes after an investigation last month that found the 58-year-old Joyner inappropriately kissed three female employees and a student. Woo-hoo. And, quote, lightly swatted one teacher on the head. Quote, it was presumptuous, arrogant, and wrong of you to assume that it was permissible or appropriate to hug or kiss a woman in a workplace setting, unquote, Larry Serra, assistant superintendent of Puyallup School's Human Resources, wrote in a November 16th letter to Joyner. However, Philip Thompson, the lawyer hired by the district to conduct the investigation, determined Joyner's actions didn't amount to sexual harassment because the contact was neither, quote, severe nor pervasive, unquote. Plus, the people who were kissed or hugged never told Joyner they objected. And that's education news of the mildly weird and legally informed.
Well, you know, just like we don't want to make light of that piece of scandal, we don't want to make light of sexual harassment.
Mike, you gave me a kiss in the hallway right before the show.
I did. And did you find it, did you object? Did you find it severe or pervasive?
I found it a little pervasive.
Okay. I didn't realize that. Although, was that when you were kissing me back that you found it pervasive?
That might have had something to do with it.
Oh, goodness.
Wow.
Lightly swatted one teacher on the head. Is that a sign of affection in some cultures?
I think it was like one of those playful kind of like you probably had a rolled up magazine. It was kind of like a cha-chunk.
Have you sometimes lightly swat Jolene on the head?
Yeah, or the staff.
It's just you're off. You're mostly female staff.
Yes, but you know, but it's just I don't know. Boy, oh boy, this strikes me as interesting. Huh? Good Lord.
All right. Well, that is all the time we have for this week. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to read the original Education Gadfly at www.edexcellence.net. Till next week.
I'm Rick Hess.
And I'm Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Foundation, signing off.